Hour number two, Toby Altizer taking you up until 3:30 here on The Fan. Nats baseball coming up a little bit later today. Game two against the Padres. 4:05 first pitch. Should be a fun day at the yard. C.J. Abrams bobblehead giveaway. We'll get into the Nationals coming up at 2 o'clock. Right now, though, let's get into the Commanders. I think the wide receiver room behind Terry McLaurin leaves a lot to be desired for this football team. And Mitch Tischler, I believe it was, gave a line last year talking about this team that I think directly applies to this wide receiving core. He said the team hoped for the best but didn't plan for the worst. Hope for the best but didn't plan for the worst. Because you can look at this receiving core and hope with just about every one of these guys behind Terry McLaurin. But what if they are just what they've been throughout the rest of their careers and it doesn't work out that way? So you can look at Luke McCaffrey and you can hope that he's going to be good. Luke McCaffrey's also had a career high of 203 yards in a season. You can hope that Antonio Williams is going to be good. I actually do think that he's going to be pretty good, but he's a rookie. You can hope that Treylon Burks is going to be really, really good. The most yards he's had in a season was his rookie year, 444. And by the way, the most games he's played in a season was 11. You can hope that De'Ami Brown is going to be able to really help this team out. But his career high yardage in the season is 308. I could do this for almost everybody behind Terry McLaurin. And honestly, the funniest part is the guy that everyone is writing off the most in this receiving core in terms of guys behind Terry, pickups in the offseason, the guy that everyone has no interest in seeing is Van Jefferson. And of those guys behind him, he's got at least a career high of 802 yards in a season in 21. Now, I'm not saying he's the best of the rest. I'm not saying that. I just think it's a little bit funny. So I look at this wide receiving core, and I just don't think they're very good behind Terry. And there are some positive things to take away. Like there are some ways that you could look at this and feel good about this receiving core and spin it. I think a big part of that is two things. One, Jaden Daniels, who we'll get more into in just a second. But two, the new offense should be able to help these guys out. I mean, maximizing the talent that you do have behind Terry McLaurin is going to be a big part of making this offense successful and being able to find what these guys thrive at, what they're successful at, and also scheming stuff to help them out. Making sure that, you know, it's not always dependent on them trying to win a one-on-one matchup or something of that nature. Being able to confuse the defense a little bit, make them have to decipher who's going where and cause some problems with bunches and motions and different things and give guys good opportunities to be successful by creating a leverage that works in their favor. All those sorts of things. You can do that if you're David Blau, but you can only do so much before you've got to have some talent at that receiver position. And it's not to say the guys behind them can't do it. Again, you're hoping. You've got guys that are talented football players. I watched Treylon Burks out at practice the other day. He is one impressive-looking individual. And you can see why they have some hope that he can be a really good help for this offense. I like what Luke McCaffrey showed me last season, albeit for a short amount of time. De'Ami Brown was the second-best receiver for this team on their playoff run during the playoffs and what he was able to give you. So it's not to say these guys haven't shown you anything. But I think relying so heavily on them could be part of their downfall. I think relying so heavily on guys who are unproven or guys who have not shown that they can do it at a high level in the NFL could be the downfall of this team. And it's part of why I'm disappointed that they haven't made, didn't make any moves. And one of the things that worries me is that they go into this basically having Brandon Ayuk written down in pencil, saying, well, we don't have the second guy yet, but it's going to be Brandon Ayuk. And I just don't think that's a good plan. I really don't. If he was brought in as an extra guy, saying, well, we might be able to get him, but let's go sign, take your pick, a free agent wide receiver in the meantime, then fine. But the guys they brought in are depth pieces or guys that they might move on from and not feel bad about having to cut them because they're not paying them a significant amount. They didn't go get a number two receiver. And part of the thing that worries me about Ayuk is I still don't know what he looks like as a football player. I'm still not sure that he's going to walk out onto the field and be the Brandon Ayuk that we saw a couple of years ago in San Francisco. I'm not sold on that. I hope that he can be if they bring him in here, if that's the guy that they ultimately get. I just think that depending on a guy on another roster being your saving grace at the receiver position behind Terry is a flawed process, and I don't like it at all. I'm not huge on the idea of bringing in Stephon Diggs and some of the extra stuff, but at this point, football-wise, I think they kind of need that kind of a player. They need someone who's reliable behind Terry. And I get looking at some of the other options to catch passes. Chigakonko, I think, fits in there. Rashad White, I think, fits in there as a pass-catching back. But realistically, how many times is Chigakonko going to catch the football during a game? Are they going to suddenly start throwing to their tight end 8 times a game? Are they going to start throwing the ball to Rashad White 5 times a game? I don't think so. So you've got to have more guys to step up. And I just don't like relying on it. I don't like being forced to rely on Luke McCaffrey, Antonio Williams, Treylon Burks, De'Ami Brown. It's not to say that I don't think maybe one of those guys could pop. Maybe Jalen Lane in year 2 takes a big step. It's not to say that I don't think they can do it, but you're relying on it. That or you're thinking that Terry McLaurin's going to be like Jaxon Smith-Njigba last year, where he's going to go for 1,800 yards and their next leading receiver is like Cooper Kupp with 500. I don't see that. Even though I love Terry, I don't see him going for a outrageous yardage total. So you're going to have other guys step up. And maybe you're just that confident in David Blough. Maybe you're just that confident in Jaden Daniels. But part of the issue here is I don't want Jaden to feel like he has to start forcing things because guys aren't creating the separation necessary, getting open. I'm just worried that behind Terry McLaurin, this receiving core leaves a lot to be desired. And I think that they went in with the plan of Brandon Ayuk being their other guy. And I just don't think that that's the best idea. I really don't. And the one that was really jarring to me, frankly, seeing how this Juwan Jennings thing played out, and look, you can go back to the beginning of the offseason. I was not in on Juwan Jennings. I had no interest in Juwan Jennings. I assumed he was going to get a big price tag deal. I assumed he was going to get a significant contract from somebody at the beginning of free agency. That did not happen. The fact that they did not get in on that sweepstakes for a year, for cheap, I really don't know why. John Keim reported that they weren't all that interested, that they weren't really having conversations with him to bring him in. I'm not a Juwan Jennings guy. I don't think he's a great number two. I think he's a number three. But I think you could look at this entire receiving core and argue that it's a bunch of wide receiver fours and Terry. And then you hope what you can get out of Antonio Williams is really good production. And I think they really do like Antonio Williams. So I think he's going to step in and really help this team out. And I think, you know, he's going to be the answer to this of who's going to step up behind Terry and who's going to be able to help them out. But that's a rookie. I don't want to be stuck in a situation where I have to have him come through or my offense falters. Again, hoping for the best, not planning for the worst. The beauty of bringing in a guy like Juwan Jennings or someone maybe a little bit better or someone on a one-year deal that's a little more reliable than what you've brought in is if Antonio Williams starts popping, then just play him more than him. That's okay. That's not a big deal. I'm allowed to put the guy I spent a little bit of money on in free agency behind him on the depth chart if Antonio Williams is better. That's okay. But I don't love going into year 3 of Jaden Daniels while he's on a rookie contract. I mean, realistically, let's just plan this out real quick. Top NFL quarterback contracts. So you're going to get to a point in a couple of years where Jaden Daniels, assuming he's the guy that everyone thinks he is, and he is going to get that big deal like we all assume he will, You've got year three. You've got year four next year. You've got the fifth year option the year after that. And then he's going to be making the top quarterback right now in AAV is 60, Dak Prescott. Behind him, you've got a couple of quarterbacks at 55 with Burrow, Allen, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence. In the next 2 years, you would assume that Jaden could get upwards of that 60 number. He's not getting that anywhere near close to that right now. Matter of fact, right now he's making 9. So then why are his receiving options so poor? Why? In a couple of seasons when more needs to be put on his plate because he's making 60 plus million, I can understand it. I don't get it right now. And I know you had to spend resources on the defense. I know all those things. But how in the world? And I wouldn't have been thrilled if they spent a ton of money on Alec Pierce, $30 plus million. I would not have been thrilled with that. I'd much rather that than at least having a number two receiver beside this, where I don't have anything. I just think the way that they have approached this receiving core is not good. And God forbid there's an injury to Terry. And we've seen, I mean, look at last season, how much they had to rely on the rest of the offense without Terry. He's largely been reliable throughout his career. I'm hoping that last year was the anomaly, and I'm a big Terry guy. But what if something happens? It's football. I just think that they're not putting themselves in the best position to be successful and not helping Jaden Daniels out in the way that they should. I think that they did a good job last offseason of helping him out in a lot of ways, bringing in a left tackle, drafting a right tackle, bringing in an extra weapon in Deebo Samuel. But it's also funny, too, that the same guys that you're trusting to be able to turn this thing around at the receiver position and evaluate the receiver position are the same people that didn't want to pay Terry McLaurin. And Terry's been the best receiver here we've seen in quite some time. I just don't have a lot of confidence in the guys behind Terry. I really don't. And it scares me that if something happens, this team's going to end up in a really bad spot. All right, let's get to your phone calls next. 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in. This receiving core behind Terry, do you have any faith in it? Do you think there are guys that are just going to step up and play well? How confident are you in the guys behind Terry McLaurin? We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Confident at all at the receiving options behind Terry McLaurin. I like their tight end option with Chigakonkwo. I like Rashad White. So if you want to throw them in there, I feel good about them. But by the way, if we're going to throw in tight end, do you feel good about the tight end receiving options behind Chigakonkwo? John Bates, Ben Sinnott, probably not. So again, calm me down. Tell me why I'm the idiot. Or if you agree, feel free. 800-636-1067. How do you feel about the receiving options behind Terry McLaurin? Let's get out to Patrick in Stafford. Patrick, what's going on?
Hey, so thanks for taking my call. I don't agree that the receiving core behind Jaden is that bad. I mean, I understand that they're not great. Obviously, would we want to have, you know, like the Eagles 1-2 punch of Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown? Of course, that's the dream. But, you know, I think a lot of it came down to Jaden's health last year for some of these wide receivers. I think Luke McCaffrey did show out in the time that, you know, Terry was injured. Not having Austin Ekeler, I think, really tightened things up for some of the wide receivers. I mean, losing him as, like, a receiving back in the offense did hurt us a lot. You know, we had Bill as a true runner, but, you know, I think there's a lot more to be on the upside about for the offense. Now, I do agree that nobody's proven, right? If you're looking at a proven veteran, somebody that's, you know, close to 1,000 yards, that's not what we have behind Terry. But I think the young guys are going to show out. I think Luke McCaffrey especially, I'm thinking he's going to be close to 1,000 yards this season. You know, maybe that's a little bit of a reach, but I think he can step up and, you know, with some of the schemes and some of the run game, I think we'll have more this season. You know, I think the offense overall should be better. So I don't necessarily agree we're down the dumps. I don't think Alec Pierce would have been worth that amount of money. I don't think
I agree on that.
Juwan Jennings. And frankly, I don't know if I want an old guy like, you know, Stephon Diggs taking up reps from some of the younger guys we got to develop. You know, think about how many other teams develop young wide receivers. Besides Terry, we really haven't been able to do that. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call. One of the interesting parts is, how do you view this season? If you view this season as, hey, let's win 8 or 9 games and feel like we're trending in the right direction, then maybe I tend to agree with the idea that you don't want to take reps away from some of the young guys. I don't care about taking away reps from some of the young guys if the plan is to try to win. If the plan is to try to get into the playoffs and try to get back to that level you were at while you played in the NFC Championship game, then I don't really care if Stephon Diggs takes away reps from Luke McCaffrey. I don't really care if he takes away reps from Jalen Lane. I think Antonio Williams will get his reps regardless because I think he's going to be good. But even if he takes reps away from him, that doesn't bother me as much if you're trying to actually win football games. I think that's the interesting part about this is where do you view this season? Because if you view it as let's just take a few steps forward from where this team was at last season, then I think I can get on board with that a little bit more. One thing that I think is interesting, a lot of people go back to this team in 24 and go, well, the receiving core behind Terry wasn't very good then either. And I don't disagree with you, but Olamide Zaccheaus would be probably the number two guy on this roster. And you go, well, Zaccheaus wasn't that good. At least before he got here, his career high in 2022 was 533 yards. I already told you that the highest of the other guys so far for this team would be Van Jefferson at 802, and then it's Treylon Burks at 444. So again, I'm not saying great here. I mean, we're picking nits here. It's not like it's anything incredible. Noah Brown was another guy. Noah Brown, at least before he got here, had gone for a couple 500-yard seasons with Dallas and with Houston, right? So there was at least a little bit of a track record there. And I know people love to look back at Zach Ertz and pretend like he was just some dinosaur who didn't do anything, but Zach Ertz helped this football team out. Zach Ertz was a net positive for this football team. And I saw some people clowning JP Flame for his take that Zach Ertz and Chig Okonkwo is like a similar lateral type move. I don't think that's insane. Strobes, I don't think it's insane. Like, if you look at the last two seasons, I get different quarterbacks, different teams. Chig Okonkwo the last 2 years has gone for 479 and 560. He's definitely more dynamic than Zach Ertz. But Zach Ertz in 24 went for 654 and 504 last year in 13 games. It's right. Not like Zach Ertz was some forgettable player.
Right, he wasn't. But I think they're betting on the upside of Okonkwo just because he wasn't a heavy feature the way he thinks he could have been 100%. In Tennessee. So maybe if he is truly better than Tennessee perceived him to be, and the yard after catch stuff is really that pivotal to their offense, he should go over those totals.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I think the upside, I think if you told me which one I prefer right now, there's no question I'd prefer Chig Okonkwo. But this idea that Zach Ertz is just some forgettable football player, he was a security blanket for this team. He was a massive part of their offense in 24. He was someone that really, really helped out Jaden Daniels by being that reliable weapon when he wasn't going to Terry McLaurin, that second guy that he could always rely on. So I just think some of that's a little bit crazy to me. And when you look at where this offense is at this year and you compare it to what you're talking about in 24, I don't know that they have the weapons that they even had in 24. Do you think that's crazy?
No, just because everybody's unproven right now. I think McCaffrey finally came along for a few games, but then he broke his collarbone. He was coming along more as a kick returner, I'd say, than a receiver, even though he had a couple decent games when other guys went down. He stepped up a little bit. But Lane, his hands are questionable at this point, which is interesting for a guy that his main job is to catch a punt. I guess it's just different when you're trying to catch a pass, but his hands are a bit questionable as a receiver right now, so I don't know how much production you're relying on him. Williams is really the X factor, honestly. It's how good and how productive can he be in his rookie season, because I'm not really thinking about whoever they're going to bring in, whether it's Ayuk or Diggs or somebody else right now, because they're not on the roster right now. And it's tough to imagine the scenario where they are, because even if you get them into the building late, how effective are they going to be? Are you already way behind if you're bringing in one of these guys too late?
Yeah, 100%. 800-636-1067. Chris is in Fairfax. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? Hey, just real quick, this is going to be a quick hitter. I've lived in the area for 20 years, but I'm actually a Tampa Bay fan, and my quick comment is Rashard White is not a solution to anything. He's a cast-off from Tampa Bay. I don't think he's solving any problems, and that's all I got.
I appreciate it, Chris. I do think that I think some people are having a little bit too much fun with what the Commanders did this offseason. And I'm not saying Rashad White's not a good pickup. I think he's going to help the team out. Rashad White is not one of the best pass-catching backs in the league.
Well, I don't think he's being brought here to be the answer. He's being brought here to be an option.
Yeah.
If anything, because they need somebody to fill a gap as a third down back. But you still could look for production elsewhere because Jeremy McNichols, I thought, actually was pretty decent in that role last year. Those guys will have to battle it out a little bit. I think White would ultimately get more of those opportunities. But same thing, Jerome Ford. Like, those guys will have to all compete in camp, per se.
I mean, I've heard some people say that he's one of the best pass-catching backs. I think that's a little hyperbolic. I think that's a little bit far. I think he's good. I think he can help you out. I don't think he's one of the... In terms of like what they give you, obviously health and like age-wise, like I think Austin Ekeler gave you more a couple seasons ago than what Rashad White probably gives you this season. Like in 24, what Austin Ekeler was able to do, you'd be thrilled if that's what Rashad White gives you.
I think what the offense is centered around and just the scheme is also important for those type of players because Washington, over the last 10, 15 years or so, they've actually been pretty productive with those type of players. Chris Thompson had a really good run here before injuries kind of derailed him. Even J.D. McKissic, I'd say for two seasons, was really, really solid, and then injuries also derailed him. Like, health is the most important thing, and Ekeler didn't provide that. So if Rashad White provides you health at that position, you're probably getting a slight upgrade just because of availability, because Ekeler was just not on the field so often. And it obviously what happened last year was more freak than the stuff the year before. We had all the concussions, but it matters at the end of the day.
I have one guy on offense that I'm really thrilled about. I know it sounds like I'm just, you know, the most negative person ever when it comes to this team. I'm not thrilled with a lot of their offseason on the offensive side of the football. There is one guy, though, that I think with some of the stuff that they've done is going to thrive this upcoming season. I'll tell you who that is next. You're on the Fan. Storm.
I'm like Tyler Cruz.
I need you to pump up the vibes because it's been a little bit negative for me. There is one guy that I'm extremely bullish on going into this season. One guy that I think is going to be really, really good. I think this scheme fits him perfectly. I think he's going to be a breakout star. I think people are going to love him already or more than they already do. I think that he is going to be someone that we're talking about at the end of the year a lot differently than we're talking about him right now. And that name is... Bill Kroski Merritt. This guy is going to shine this season. I think he's going to be fantastic. They're running a lot more of an outside zone run style scheme that we see in Shanahan offenses, and I think he's going to be so good at this. When you look at the way that he likes to run the football, he is that one cut, patience, vision, allow him to get up the field with that burst. I don't know if he has the breakaway speed, even though we saw him break a couple of long runs last season. I don't know that he has the traditional breakaway speed that you talk about with some other backs, but he has that burst, that vision on getting through the hole and getting past the line of scrimmage and his ability to get to the second level. And I think he's special in that sense. And I think that this scheme is going to fit what he's trying to do really, really well. Ben and I were talking in the break about why he's not able to maybe be more involved in the passing game. And I think he's got to show, one, he's got to be better in pass protection. That'd be number one. Two, he's got to improve his hands quite a bit as well. But I think he can be a big feature of this offense. And he's going to have to be, frankly, because, you know, as much as people want to say that they, as much as I'm talking about the receiver room and saying there's questions, the running back room has some questions, too. Now, it's a position that you can kind of find a hot hand, and it's a little bit different than the receiver position. You know, it's very dependent on the O-line and those sorts of things. And if guys have, you know, any semblance of vision, if you can block stuff up, they can get through the hole and make something out of it. I like what they have in that running back room. But it's also a bunch of guys, too, that aren't the most proven. We'll see what Catron Allen brings. I think he brings you a kind of Chris Rodriguez type of runner, powerful, going to be able to get you those tough yards when you need them and second and short, third and short, down in the goal line scenarios. Rashad White gives you a nice pass catching back. I'd be curious to see what happens with that fourth back, assuming they keep four, if they do. Otherwise, you know, I like Jerome Ford. I like what he's been able to do throughout his career. I like Jeremy McNichols, frankly. I'm kind of surprised that he wasn't a big part of their plans, because last year what he was able to do, and even in 24, what he was able to do in third down scenarios where he had to get to the yard to gain, and it was third and McNichols. He was so good at finding a way to get to the yard marker that he needed to. But I think Bill is going to be a big part of this offense, because this offense is going to be a big change. Like, if there was one thing I took away from watching OTAs, and this is probably a good thing, frankly, but if there's one thing I took away from watching OTAs the other day, it's this offense is going to look night and day different. Night and day. Like, if you just told somebody that had just watched the last couple of years of football and they don't venture out a whole lot, like, if you told them to watch this year's Commanders team on offense versus the last two, they'd be like, whoa. This is not even remotely the same. Not even in the same stratosphere of a type of offense. Going to be a lot more under center, a lot more shifts and motions, a lot more huddle. Like, there's going to be a lot more of a traditional style, traditional feel to this offense. And I think they're going to try to build this thing off of the run game. They're going to try to build this thing off of being able to let Jaden not have to work as hard and turn around and hand the football off and work off of that with the play actions and some of those things. I think they're going to try to work through the run game, because as much as the modern game has evolved in different ways, I think you're starting to see that cycle go back a little bit. We always talk about the NFL and sports in general being cyclical, and you know, what's old becomes new again. I think you're starting to see a little bit of a shift back to defense and running the football being some of the focal points of what you need to be. Not to say that there's not an evolution to that, where there needs to be an efficiency to the passing game. There needs to be, you know, an explosive plays as well built in there and trying to create those. But the way that defense is played now, where you saw Kansas City kind of brought this about with the way teams would start playing them when they had Tyreek Hill, now having the two safeties back, teams don't want to give up the big plays to the passing game. And teams are so good at creating those explosive plays that now defenses are like, you know what, screw it. We'll let you dink and dunk and chip away in the run game a little bit, but we don't want to be able to give you the explosive plays. And in turns, offenses have realized, well, it's not very easy to get these explosive plays, but if we can run the football and be consistent with it and not shoot ourselves in the foot with penalties and not turn the football over, we can actually find some success here. That's why I think you saw, you know, Seattle had a weird run game and that their run game was not very successful overall, not very efficient, but they were still willing to do it, but their defense was really good. You look back at the Eagles a couple of years ago and obviously what they had going with Saquon Barkley and their run game. So I think what the Commanders are going to do this season is live on the ground a lot and then try to marry that up to the passing game to create some of those explosive plays. Because you think about Sean McVay's style offense, you think about Kyle Shanahan, you think about those styles, even Ben Johnson, they're built off of the run game. They want to run the football. They need to run the football to really be successful. And I mean, think back to what this team played when they played the Lions in the playoffs and Ben Johnson got away from running the football with Jahmyr Gibbs and how much that helped out this team, because Jared Goff then had more put on his plate and Washington was able to take advantage a couple of times of Jared Goff. I think if you look at the top offenses in the league, maybe the balance, quote-unquote, isn't 50-50, but the effectiveness of their run game is a massive part of why they're so successful on the offense. So I think it's going to play a big role, and I think the guy that's going to be the biggest beneficiary of it is going to be Bill, because I think his style of running fits this style of scheme. Think of some of the guys that have run in that scheme that maybe aren't the best talents, quote-unquote, maybe aren't the most highly thought-of prospects. You know, Christian McCaffrey obviously running in it now, and Saquon running in some of that stuff now works, obviously, and they're incredibly talented. But a guy like a Raheem Mostert, right, and what he was able to do in a season in San Francisco. Like, even guys that they plugged in, Elijah Mitchell ran well for a little while. Isaac Garrendo ran well for a while. Like, they find guys that they can plug in that fit that specific scheme. I think Bill fits this one even better than he did last season, and you saw the flashes of the vision that this guy has, and that's one of the major keys when you're running this outside zone style scheme for a running back, you need to have good vision and you need to have that quick first cut, that burst to get through the hole. You know, if you're not able to break away, that's fine. But if you have a quick burst when you see the hole and go, that's how you can be a really effective running back in the scheme. And I think he's got, you know, more than, I mean, look how effective Alfred Morris was in running an outside zone. I know they were running a lot of read option as well, but in running an outside zone, and Alfred Morris was not fast, but his good vision and quick to get up the field. I think Bill gives you a lot of that type of stuff, but with an extra burst in that second level. So I'm really excited to see what he can do this season. If you told me that he went for over 1,000 yards this season, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I feel really good about what he's going to be able to give this offense this season. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into baseball coming up at 2 o'clock. But first, there was a cool giveaway for the Texas Rangers. I want to tell you what that is and maybe take a look at DC and how they could maybe incorporate some cool giveaways, as the Nationals are giving away a nice C.J. Abrams bobblehead today as well. You're listening to Overtime with Toby on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 3:30 here on The Fan, taking you up until Nats baseball. Fun giveaway for the Nationals today, a baseball card C.J. Abrams bobblehead. Cool one. We got them last night. They look really nice. They're going to be really cool to add to the collection. So if you're going out to the ballpark today, make sure you get there early to get your C.J. Abrams bobblehead. So it's cool. Last night at the Rangers game, they were giving away a jersey, a Nolan Ryan jersey, but it has some of the blood marks from one of his infamous games where he's pitching with a bloody jersey. And it's a really, really cool one. Like, there, I saw some teams have done these where you have a moment or you have a player with like a distinct mark on their jersey and they give it away. If you know anything about Justin Turner, when he played for the Dodgers, he always has a ton of pine tar on his bat and he hits the back of his jersey. And so across the white Dodgers jersey that's very clean and white, there would be a big pine tar stain basically right across the top of his number and then going through his jersey. And they gave away a T-shirt that essentially looked like a Dodgers jersey with that mark on the back and Justin Turner. So that's a cool one. I like what they did here. They're giving away a Nolan Ryan bloody jersey, which is cool because that's something that is iconic for the Rangers. It was something that he wore during a 1990 game after something happened in an at-bat to Bo Jackson. I mean, we all remember seeing the video of him and Robin Ventura and him beating him up essentially when he came out, but it's cool. So he got a bloody lip and it was all over the front of his jersey. And I think that's a fun giveaway. Those are the sorts of cool things. So it got me to thinking, we've got a giveaway today at Nationals Park with the C.J. Abrams bobblehead. Are there some things that we could give out, the Nationals could give out, that would be fun, that are themed to a moment like that? And I was trying to think of some other ones, too, around Major League Baseball. There's some bobbleheads I was thinking of that, you know, maybe the Nats could do as well. But, Strobes, if you can think of any, let me know. So the first one that came to my mind, because you see this artifact, I think it's might be in the 200 level in the Champions Club. They have the hat, and I think the jersey that is all gross looking from chocolate syrup from Max Scherzer when that was their celebration, when they would just dump chocolate syrup all over.
That's a good one.
Stars of the game. So they could do like a chocolate syrup type of giveaway for either a hat or a shirt or something like that for Max Scherzer. I think that'd be fun.
I have a great one. Jason Wirth and Dan Colco, when Wirth was like, well, you can tell them they can kiss my...
Huge touch it and he says it. That'd be a good one. I like the one that they gave out last year where they did the multiple different moments and you could get one of three different things. And I got the Worth one of him stomping on home plate, throwing up the batting helmet. I thought that was a really cool bobblehead. One that I was thinking of outside of the Nationals, and maybe the Red Sox have done this before, but they could give away the Curt Schilling bloody sock, similar to this Nolan Ryan thing. I mean, that's obviously infamous. I was trying to think of some other ones, though. One that they did give away that I didn't get a chance to get, but I really wish I could have. The Nationals did a Soto Shuffle bobblehead. Do you remember that one?
I don't remember what it looks like.
I mean, it's just essentially...
It's like him shuffled.
Well, his lower half shuffles and moves like a bobblehead.
Oh, wait, that's
so you can do the
clever.
Full Soto shuffle with it. If they want to do some other ones, you could do a Strasmus bobblehead. Maybe when Strauss comes back and has his number retired, him dressed up as like Santa Claus.
I mean, when are we going to get that to happen?
I don't know when that's going
to
happen.
But it needs to happen.
Hopefully that happens soon. I was thinking CJ Abrams loves the alien thing for whatever reason.
What if he's just getting abducted by like a UFO?
Well, I wasn't thinking abducted. I was thinking of like CJ Abrams, like his upper half of a body coming out of a flying saucer.
That's also a good one.
Something like that, a bobblehead. Howie Kendrick, I think if you could have him like kissing the foul pole or something at Minute Maid, I think that'd be good. So I think it was a cool giveaway for what the Rangers did with the Nolan Ryan one. If you have any ideas, feel free to hop in 800-636-1067. I actually like the idea of the Nationals one that they're giving away today. So it looks like a baseball card. It's in a box that on the back, it's got some stats and it's got some different things on the side, but it's meant to be left in the box because it's not like a full standing one where, you know, they gave away a CJ one a couple years ago where he's swinging the bat. This one is one you leave in the box and it sits there and it looks like CJ, but instead it's a three-dimensional type figure and his bobblehead's in the baseball card. So I like that one. They've got a Dalen Lyle one coming up in a couple of weeks, I believe, giving away him sliding into third base, I think is a good one. Chris in Hyattsville has a good one. Chris, what kind of giveaway could the Nats do?
Am I on the air?
Yeah, what's going on, Chris?
I'm good. How are you doing? I don't know if they would do this, but I think it would be iconic. Is Davey Martinez going irate in the World Series on the Trey Turner play?
Yes.
So like a little bobblehead of him being held back from the umpire? Because that was an iconic moment.
I love that. Or there was the one that Davey got ejected when he got down on all fours behind the plate and was basically saying that you're getting pitches down here. Right behind the plate. I mean, that was years after. That'd be a good one, too.
Oh, I got one more.
Yeah.
Were you in town when Mike Morse hit the Phantom home run?
Oh, yes. I wasn't here, but I know what you're talking about. That would be fantastic.
So they made him go back to home plate. They made him go back to home plate and pretend to swing when he hit a grand slam.
That's a good one. I like it. I like it. Appreciate it, Chris. I don't know how you do that one and it doesn't just look like a bobblehead that is missing the bat, because you could essentially do that with a lot of bobbleheads because the bat usually comes separately that you have to put in.
There's a lot of good Davey bits. They should get one where he's up at the podium with the printed out image he took to like show that the umpires were wrong.
Or just one that him sitting in his chair relaxed and it just says boom. Like, I mean,
the one with the image printed out is so good because it'd be so commemorative of, one, that moment, and also that time, because I think he's wearing a COVID mask in that picture as well, so they could put a COVID mask on him.
There are a lot of good ones with Davey. There really are. And maybe that's something that could happen in the future. I don't think that's anytime soon, but maybe when you have an anniversary of that World Series team, maybe in a couple of years. What would it be, 10 years in 3 years now? Isn't that crazy to think about? 2029, maybe when you have like an anniversary of that sort, or maybe you get to 15 years or whatever it is, celebrating that World Series, I think maybe you could do that. But I thought that was a fun giveaway. Thought it was kind of cool. Maybe something that, you know, I don't know that there's as many iconic moments like that with a bloody jersey yet for the Nationals, like that specific type. But if there is something, I think it's a cool giveaway that the Rangers did yesterday. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's keep it on the Nats. I want to talk about this team and the way that they're playing. Is this something that we think is sustainable? How long can it be sustainable? They're playing 500 ball right now. Is this something that you could see going on for longer? Let's talk about that next. You want to hop in 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you here on The Fan.